This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Kidnappers, a community access media station. Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.
Hello, and welcome to Landwise Promoting Sustainable Crop Production, a podcast series about sustainable ways to grow food in New Zealand. I'm Georgia O'Brien, Extension Coordinator for Landwise based in Hastings. Landwise has been around since 1999, helping farmers and growers to develop and test new practices through on-farm trials and extending cutting-edge research to the farm or orchard gate. Through our podcast series, we are bringing the insights of lead researchers, technologists, and farmers to listeners from all over the ag and hort industry. Each month has a theme, with guests joining us weekly for discussions. At the end of the month, we'll have them back as a panel to talk together and respond to your queries. This month, we're looking at part two of Managing Herbicide Resistance, brought to you by our platinum sponsors, BASF, Hawke's Bay Regional Council, Vegetables New Zealand, and Processed Vegetables New Zealand. I'm excited to be joined today by guests Trevor James and Catherine Tozer. Catherine and Trevor are both working on the MBIE Ag Research Project, Managing Herbicide Resistance, and join me today to discuss two areas of research into non-herbicide weed control. Trevor James is a senior scientist at Ag Research, and aside from his role as manager of the many scientists working on the Herbicide Resistance Project, he is also researching the potential for cover crops to control weeds in maize. Thanks for coming on the podcast this morning, Trevor. It would be great to start with some background on this work. As I understand it, about a third of the maize grown in New Zealand is grown for grain, and the remaining two-thirds is for silage, which generally has a cover crop over winter. However, the maize grain, harvested in late May through to June, is often left fallow over winter. Is that correct? Is this the niche that you're kind of hoping to fill with this research into cover crops?
Yeah, thanks, Georgia, and thanks for the invitation. You're quite correct. The grain growers generally harvest so late that they leave their ground fallow, although we're not sure that this is the best option. But because the silage growers harvest earlier, they have the opportunity to put in a crop over winter. And they usually grow annual ryegrass, but then they use this annual ryegrass for feed, and so they harvest it completely just before they replant again. And we're not sure that this is the best use of that cover crop.
Right. So there's some potential for the residue left behind with less grazing to provide some weed management for the following crop.
Yes, and so we haven't actually worked out how much residue you would need yet, but we're evaluating annual ryegrass, oats, faba beans and Persian clover, all as different options as cover crops, and looking at, well, cover crops have several potential benefits, retention of nutrients and soil structure and that sort of thing are all really, really positive outcomes from having a cover crop. But we're particularly interested in using cover crops to reduce herbicide use.
Mm. So what have the results shown so far with those different varieties?
We've demonstrated that we can reduce the number of herbicides used. And so along with those four cover crops, we've had a fifth one, which is essentially nothing. So that's bare ground or fallow through the winter. We've followed those cover crops, or across those cover crops, we've put one of five different herbicide regimes. Once again, the first of those is no herbicide, but then we've followed that up with a single, just a pre-emergence herbicide. And we've also tested a pre-emergence plus one post-emergence herbicide. We've tested no pre-emergence herbicide, but one post-emergence herbicide. And we've tested no pre-emergence herbicide, but two post-emergence herbicides. And our results are clearly showing that we can eliminate the pre-emergence herbicide and still get excellent yields. In fact, our best yields are frequently coming from a single post-emergence herbicide.
Right, so roughly when is that applied after the crop emerges? How many weeks?
About 4 weeks, okay. If it's a single herbicide. If we have bad weeds, then we would go for the double post-emergence herbicide, and that would be at about 3 weeks and 6 weeks. If it's a single one, we try and cover both beds by putting it at about 4 weeks.
So I guess that shows then that the residue left behind from those cover crops really does suppress weeds in the first few weeks of growth. Is that correct?
Yes, we've looked at two different aspects of this. One is the physical cover that's left behind, the residue, which is flattened, but also particularly with clover, there's the potential for an allelopathic residue also, which is basically just a chemical exuded from either the leaves or the roots which inhibits the germination of weed seeds. We think this is the case. In fact, we've demonstrated this is the case in the glasshouse with the clover.
So what is it about the clover producing this chemical? How does it compete with the other weeds or suppress them?
Well, the chemical is just there in the soil. We don't know what the chemical is, but clovers and vetches are widely used in Asia for this very purpose, so
right.
that they can use less herbicide.
And how long does it...
It just sits there and the weed seeds simply do not germinate in the presence of some of these root exudates.
That's really interesting. How long does it persist in the soil?
Well, that's a really good question, and that's something we haven't looked at because we're using a direct drilling in this study so that we haven't got a cultivation. And that does delay seedling emergence a little bit, but we are finding that the chemical is staying around long enough for the weed seeds to be inhibited, but it doesn't have any effect at all on the maize, fortunately.
Okay. And I remember you mentioning a few weeks ago when we were talking about this, that the oats crop grown before the maize crop didn't do so well and was kind of impacting how the maize was growing afterwards. Can you talk a little bit about that?
So this is a long-term trial, and we're glad we made a long-term trial out of it because two things have happened. One is because we're using minimum tillage or direct drilling, we have a build-up of maize residue on the surface. This has made it very difficult to plant the small-seeded cover crops. But the large-seeded ones like oats and faba bean have been doing very well, even planted into a deep layer of maize residue. The oats had an interesting effect on the yield of grain this year, and we can't explain why. It seems to be tied up with the drought in some way. We got a very good yield of silage, but in the oats, the grain yield was reduced, and we do not know why, but it was a very, very dry year here in the Waikato where we did the trial.
So what do you hope to learn from the remainder of this trial work as it goes forward?
So the trial work is also done under the study looking at herbicide resistance, which is the main reason why we want to reduce the use of herbicides, because if we reduce the use of herbicides, we will eliminate some aspects of the herbicides developing resistance in some weeds. So we're going to do this trial for a few more years. We have, as I have already said, some problems come up which we need to solve. And going forward, we're also going to look at some different cover crops, which might or might not provide some different benefits and overcome some of these problems. As an ongoing trial, we're doing all this work in close collaboration with Foundation for Arable Research, and updates will come from them on their homepage from time to time, and also in the LandWise conference we will be having a regular slot every so often too. So please watch the space.
Yeah, sounds great. Thank you very much, Trevor. We're now going to swap over to Catherine and hear from her, but great insights. Thank you very much.
Okay, thank you for the opportunity.
Catherine Tozer, another senior scientist at Ag Research, is focusing on the development and evaluation of tools and practices to improve non-chemical weed management. A key area of her research is pasture fallow, a practice where certain paddocks or parts of the farm are set aside to reduce weed establishment from overgrazing. Thanks for joining me, Catherine.
Well, thanks, Georgia.
Catherine, can you run me through how you're investigating grazing as a non-chemical weed management technique?
Sure. We're going to be establishing some experiments this year based on some preliminary data that we have, looking at how deferred grazing can reduce the abundance of California thistles. What we've found is that if you take livestock out of a paddock in middle to late spring and don't graze that pasture until the end of the summer, which we're actually doing for reasons of other reasons to do with having the desirable species to increase in the paddock and looking at feed supply on the farm. But we've found as we're doing that, that it looks like we're getting quite a good impact on suppressing the growth of California thistle. So we've been measuring how much California thistle is there from before when the paddock was locked up and the stock was removed for the year following. And the preliminary data is showing us that it's, say, 20% lower in the paddock that was previously deferred. Now, we need to do some work where it's a properly replicated scientific study so we can get some numbers on this and be certain that it is the impact of the deferred grazing, and also how much does it suppress the thistle and for how long.
You mentioned it could reduce Californian thistle growth by about 20%. What other weeds are controlled by grazing techniques such as pasture fallow?
We've looked at some work on the east coast, Hill Country near Gisborne, where variegated thistle can be quite an issue. There, instead of looking at spring and summer and pasture growth, we focus more on what happens in autumn and how much pasture cover you need and for how long to prevent the establishment of variegated thistle that might be sitting there in the seed bank. So in this case, we had a mown field plot study that looked a little bit like a chessboard.
Oh, yeah.
With pastures of different heights. So they went in mass from about 1,000 kgs of dry matter per hectare up to 3,000. Of course, farmers aren't going to be leaving 3,000 kgs of dry matter per hectare in a pasture for a long period of time. But we just wanted to see where was the kind of cut-off period, the cut-off pasture mass, where it could have a big impact on stopping the variegated thistle from establishing.
Mm.
So what we found is that even as soon as you had about 3 centimetres of pasture cover, or say like 1,200, 1,300 kgs of good thick pasture, that there was a massive reduction in the amount of thistle.
Wow.
That reduced, that germinated and established. And as the amount went up, it dropped even further, which is not new, but it was a really visual effect because we actually carried the treatments on with the different pasture heights and masses there right through until December. And not only reduced the establishment, but also the amount of seed that was produced. So, for example, when it was bare ground, you get 63,000 seeds per plant.
Whoa.
As of 3 centimetres, you're only getting about 3,000.
Holy, so that really reduces your weed pressure for the next few seasons.
Yes. So we were really keen to talk with a farmer on whose property we're working and say, well, what's this mean practically? Because, of course, on a large hill country property, you've got to have bare ground and stock camps and study ridges. And his way of looking at the info that we're getting and applying it practically was, well, if he focused on small parts of the farm just at any one time and left till last in the grazing round in autumn, the areas that are most prone to variegated thistle establishment. So in some ways it wasn't so much they was aiming for a target pasture cover, but just to get as much cover there as possible for a long period of time.
Right, so you can just delay the grazing or reduce the amount of grazing in certain parts of the farm that really struggle with thistle problems.
Yes, yep. Whatever is going to work for a farmer to keep that cover there, it does have a really big impact.
Mm, cool. And, of course, I guess we are talking about herbicide resistance. If you have to spray less, then that's great for reducing the pressure on resistance development.
Exactly. And it's only going to be one of a number of tools that someone is going to use to control thistle. Mm. But hopefully it will mean over time that less herbicide is needed. Obviously in really dry years it's going to be difficult because there'll be bare ground, you're going to get more thistle establishment. But again, it's part of an integrated management approach.
Yeah, definitely. And does the grazing animal come into it? Are goats, for example, a good weed control option for some farms and some farm situations?
We've been doing a little bit of work with goats as well with variegated thistle. We were looking in the kind of context where farmers might be able to mow the thistle, so looking at flatter land rather than hill country. And the goats cleaned up the cut thistle really well and actually transitioned onto the uncut thistle too. The difficulty, of course, with goats is management, but possibly down the track there may be ways that we can manage them and keep them within fences. For example, overseas they are using virtual fencing with goats. It's a long way from using it here, but if we could overcome that management barrier, it may mean that goats can be considered as a livestock class that could be run frequently with sheep or cattle and could clean up some of the weeds that sheep and cattle won't graze.
So don't release them just yet, but maybe in the next 5 years, 10 years, we might have some solutions for keeping them contained.
That would be fantastic. Oh, well, the other area we've been working in terms of the grazing animals has actually been, so working on a project as well where we're looking at training livestock to be weed managers and to eat weeds that are safe to eat but that they wouldn't normally eat. So we're looking at, can we train cattle how to eat California thistle? Now, this has been done in America, in the States, and the process involves over 10 days training the livestock to eat new novel supplementary feeds that they're not used to and gradually introducing cut up or whatever the target weed is and then withdrawing the other supplementary feeds.
Right, okay.
This is while they have full access to their normal pasture allowance. So it's not starving them. It's not forcing them to eat California thistle. It's basically training them and teaching them.
Wow, that's really interesting. And how has that been going?
We've done a pilot study here. And it's been incredibly interesting, actually. In this case, we use molasses as a grazing attractant that we put on the cut-up California thistle and applied to the thistles in a paddock here as well at Ruakura Research Centre in Hamilton. Now, we've done it on four grazings in autumn. The first grazing, they love the molasses, you can imagine, where that was applied as a kind of blanket treatment. They grazed the pasture to the ground and they kind of nibbled the thistle a bit. Where we applied it as a spot spray treatment, there was less of an impact, and where we didn't apply it at all, they didn't graze it. But what we found that by the third grazing, where the farmer, rather than giving them access to the whole paddock at once, was just strip grazing it, so they just had one day's worth of feed at a time. So he gave them what they needed for that day and then opened up a new break the next day. They actually cleaned up the thistles with the molasses on them, but also cleaned up the rest of the thistles in the paddock as well.
Oh, okay. So when the cows have to be a bit more careful with what feed's available, they are willing to eat the thistles that have been coated with molasses, which could potentially mean they eat more in the future.
Yeah, well, it's interesting because I ate thistles that were coated with molasses and weren't coated in molasses. So they ate all, basically they didn't avoid the thistles, they just ate them along with the rest of the pasture. Now, this is really early days. This was in late autumn, so there was some younger kind of softer leaf thistles that were present. It wasn't like what they are at the end of the season where they're kind of quite spiky.
Yeah.
So we need to continue this work on in the coming year to see if we get a consistent effect or is this kind of just a one-off sort of thing. But if we could train them, it would be fantastic. And again, we're not talking about force feeding. It's purely getting them accustomed to eating novel feeds and then learning that they, once they've learned they can eat them, it just means that they're not avoiding them in the paddock.
Mm, that is really interesting. So apart from following on with that research, what else are you looking into in this space of grazing techniques to control weeds?
They're the main ones at the moment. We'll continue on with the California thistle with the molasses. Really keen, as I was saying, with the deferred grazing, because that's very much preliminary results with the California thistle. But it would be good to see not just California thistle, but other kind of weeds as well that can be suppressed through grazing exclusion over that period and allowing that massive pasture to build up with all that shading and competition for nutrients below ground. You can see how it could suppress some species such as thistle that are quite vulnerable to competition.
Mm, okay. Oh, well, great. It's been excellent to talk to you today, Catherine, and hear your insights from quite a unique part of AgResearch's Managing Herbicide Resistance project. So thank you very much.
Well, thank you.
The Landwise Promoting Sustainable Crop Production podcast series was brought to you by our sponsors. We appreciate the generous support from BASF, Hawke's Bay Regional Council, Vegetables New Zealand and Processed Vegetables New Zealand.
This program was produced by and first broadcast on Radio Kidnappers, a community access media station. Thanks to New Zealand On Air for making this type of programming possible.